radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant and George.
One of us has watched 424. Is that math right? That's not 642.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios inside the Decoy in Spring Branch. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Here at the Decoy, throughout the Astros opening series versus the New York Yankees, you get $10 Shiner Bock Towers, 100 ounces, $3 Maker's Marks, $2 Mexican candy shots for all games during the opening series during March Madness, $6 Casamigos, and plus there will be the West Houston watch party for the Cougs this Friday night. Full audio throughout the Decoy. They'll have a DJ playing during commercial breaks. You don't have to hear the commercials, which I know a lot of people hate. But you'll be able to enjoy the Cougs game on Friday night as they try to advance in the tournament, or just enjoy some Astros baseball as well.
The weather outside is perfect. There's a massive TV that is out shaded on the patio right by the volleyball courts here. I'm assuming that's where the Astros game is going to be on. But if you want to watch the tournament as well, we are in a room that has, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, by my count, televisions.
Yeah, and this big one up here is actually like a bunch of televisions, so they have different things.
If they really want to go crazy, you know, so you missed out the first round of the tournament because this could have been a bazillion different TVs. But, hey, like today, you want to watch any games, I mean, you're going to be able to watch them here at the Decoy. This is a really cool spot.
5-0-4-6, Astros hit 6 home runs today. Okay.
I love that.
I would love that too.
I want to just remind the Yankees that they're nothing, that we don't even think about them. Because we don't. We don't even think about them at all. Like you see Don Draper and Mad Men say to that dork.
I like to think back more than forward about the Yankees. Because it's just, I enjoy, I hope they play in the playoffs every year because there's always a moment that just feels so satisfactory and they just ruin the Yankees' lives.
Here is my back of mind thought. They've had so much success against the Yankees that you would think at one point these losers are due.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they aren't, and maybe this can just continue. The last time that the Astros played the Yankees and getting to see the Astros take them down officially while flying back from Las Vegas and in Game 3 being at a booth at Circa Resort and Casino, a booth right next to a bunch of Yankee fans, only to see early in Game 3 the Astros take control and see these people, like all the hope, just leave their bodies. It was great. I just had this big smirk on my face wearing my Nolan Ryan Tequila Sunrise Astros jersey watching these absolute like cretins from probably like Long Island, these just human trash. Like, their souls crushed as their fake gold chains and Timberlands, which they were wearing out at the effing pool for some reason, these slobs were reminded that, like, hey, the thing that they love the most, it hasn't mattered since 2004 when the greatest choke in sports history happened.
Mm. All right, let's get to our final Astros opening day countdown.
It's always Astros time in Houston. Are you ready to play?
A lot of people were wondering what it was going to be like if the Astros didn't win the division. I guess we'll never know.
We're counting you down to the Astros season opener against the New York Yankees, March 28th.
I should have added a maniacal laugh to the end of that.
2 hours. 2 hours, Paul. We have arrived to Astros opening day. Expectations for this year. We're taking your guys' question throughout or answers throughout the day. What is the reason why the Astros get back to and win the World Series in 2024? But from a performance perspective, you mentioned earlier that the Astros had the fifth best offense in baseball last year. Do you expect the offense to be that much better or pretty consistent with where they were last season?
I think it will be better. I don't know how much better, but I do think it will be better. You're playing Yiner Diaz more. You are getting a healthy Yordan Alvarez going into the year. You're getting, more importantly, a healthy Jose Altuve going into the year. It seems like you're going to play Chaz McCormick more often than not. And, I mean, Jose Abreu can't be worse than he was for much of last year. I expect him to be better with the way he finished the season. Jeremy Peña can't be more disappointing than he was last year. I expect him to be better as well. Dude's yoked. So I think it's a pretty fair assumption to make that the Astros' offense will be better this year.
Yeah, I mean, last year they were 7th in Major League Baseball in home runs. They were 5th in RBIs, 5th in batting average. And I bring up the home runs first because you mentioned Jeremy Peña. He had 0 after, like, July 1st. Martin Maldonado did not have a ton of home runs. Victor Caratini and Yainer Diaz will hit way more home runs this year than Maldi and Diaz combined did last season. Like you mentioned, Abreu's healthy. Bregman's swing looks a little bit different. And I mean, he's got some pop early on and or towards the end of spring training, so hopefully that's going to translate. So I think the home run numbers themselves are going to be up for the Astros, and that's just going to elevate the rest of the offense. And if Peña and Diaz can stop swinging at stuff that's way outside the zone, and you just get any kind of contribution from Jake Myers, they'll easily have a top five offense in Major League Baseball this year.
Yeah, so, definitely. Yeah, I mean, look, they were fifth last year with all the issues.
Yeah.
They should be better. I think, as John and Lance said a couple of weeks ago, I think, you know, the only teams that you're looking at as potential challenges are, what, the Dodgers? Maybe the Yankees with Juan Soto aboard now?
Yeah, the Braves, of course.
Yeah, Atlanta definitely is up there, too.
And the Braves probably number one. I mean, you look at their numbers last year; they lapped Major League Baseball. I mean, RBIs they had 916. The next closest team was the Dodgers at 877. So,
how do we know they weren't stealing signs?
We don't.
I'm just asking the question.
You never know.
You never know.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying.
I agree with that. I mean,
100%.
I want the Astros to find another way to do
it. Man,
I don't care. I don't care. Win by any means necessary, especially if it gets found out a couple of years later. Because I want everyone to be mad again. I enjoy everyone being mad at the Astros.
I've enjoyed being on the scene, like the heel turn, taking a wrestling term from BMAC over there of the Houston Astros, to where they were everyone's favorite, you know, team in baseball. The young Astros won it in 2017. I found this article randomly last year. We're talking about the Home Run Derby, and there was this push for Alex Bregman in 2018. To be or 2019 to be part of the Home Run Derby.
It was just 40 home runs. Yeah, 41.
It was just glowing about Alex Bregman, this face of baseball, and how he was so likable. And then 6 months later, they were public enemy number one, and it hasn't stopped. I enjoy it. Embrace the hate.
I do believe that one of the reasons things didn't work out for me in Seattle is because I never abandoned my Astros allegiance. Until the very, very end, there were a couple of weeks where I was like, okay, well, the Astros are playing the Mariners, and the Kendall Graveman trade happened, and the Mariners had a ridiculous comeback. So there was like a 3-day period where I was like, all right, well, I think I'm going to be here for a while, so I'm just going to pander. I got canned a month later. So that worked out great.
Yeah.
That worked out great. And I felt like that was God looking down on me and saying, you have forsaken your religion. Yes, a religion that you joined after the fact, but you know who else joined a religion after the fact? Little guy by the name of Saul, who became a guy named Paul. Am I the second coming of Paul? I'm just asking the question. Because my name is Paul.
The Astros' rotation last year, or the pitching staff as a whole, had the 8th best ERA in baseball. So just as a baseline of that, you know, putting the whole group together instead of focusing on the rotation versus the bullpen, do you think the collectively the Astros will have a better ERA, a better pitching staff this year versus last year, even with all the injuries?
Starting
the year.
That's really the question, because of the injuries, you don't know when anyone's coming back. I mean, what, Arcady maybe in May? Verlander, who really knows? Verlander's being so vague about the return.
Yeah, they're saying today they're going to make a decision about if he's going to do another live bullpen or if he's going to do a rehab start in either Corpus Christi or Sugar Land. So they'll make that decision today. But yeah, it's tough with the injuries. It's just, it's so many unknowns. I'm going to say no.
No?
I don't think it's going to be a wide difference. And they still will be top 10 most likely in ERA in baseball this year, or just outside of it. But I don't know if the pitching staff statistically throughout the year when you look at the end of it because of the injuries and the middle of the bullpen will look better than it was in 2023. But I think it'll be close.
I mean,
it's going to have to be by the end of the year. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. Well, this season will be looked at in windows with the Astros pitching staff.
What are you expecting their record to be 2 months into the year? Say winning percentage-wise. Don't forget about the win total, because remember, math is not great for either of us on the show. So winning percentage-wise, obviously, like, a really good team at the end of the year is going to have, what, a 65% winning percentage. Realistic expectation for the Astros, given their pitching issues and a very difficult first 20 games or so.
Yeah, so at the end of May, you want to be 5 or 6 games above 500, is what I would say. I know that's not a percentage, but...
Well, yeah, now that when I think about it, that is like, tricky math, too.
So I'm going to say...
All right, that worked. That's slightly easier.
5 or 6 games above 500.
I'm going to say 3 above 500.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of appearances by Panic Man, which is a character on this show, to sarcastically make fun of all the people who panic about things that aren't going so well for a team. I think it's going to be a slow start, but do you expect this team to turn it around when they're healthy? 100%. I am very curious about the workload of all the pitchers who are being expected to step up. And, you know, that's going to be Ronel Blanco and J.P. France, specifically in the rotation. But then in the bullpen, I really do not know what they are going to do from the moment a starting pitcher leaves to the moment where they can turn to Brian Abreu, who suspended the first 2 games of the year, Ryan Presley, and Josh Hader.
Yeah, and the thing about their schedule that's hard to predict as well is you have some teams that I would say I'm very curious about this season. You know, you have the Tigers, who have so much young talent. Taylor Skubal was predicted to win the American League Cy Young by multiple people from the MLB Network this year. You have the Brewers, who, yes, they've lost Corbin Burns, but there's still some talent on that roster. Sorry, Junior Bronco. The Cubs were just short of missing the playoffs last year. You have an MVP candidate that you'll play right after you play the Rangers and Bobby Witt Jr. So you have some teams that are young and kind of up and coming too, where they could start on, like, they could be hot to start the year or a slow start, just making that opening stretch even more challenging for you. But I'll take anywhere between 3 to 6 games above 500 when May 1st hits. I would feel very okay with that.
Yeah, I just want to be above 500, and
yeah,
we ain't gonna panic because we ain't scared here.
Yeah, we ain't.
Y'all mean
not scared?
I reckon
not scared at all. What's that last one?
Y'all mean.
And?
I reckon.
When we get back, Rockets-Warriors watch. It's on. The Warriors played last night. Draymond Green played 4 whole minutes. We'll discuss the opposite direction these teams are heading in, it seems, next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to Paul Gallant and Joe George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy in Spring Branch.
Warriors, come out to play! Warriors, come out to play! Yeah, just like that.
Tari Eason quickly moving up my favorite Rockets player's power rankings. He's not even on the court. Love it. Last night, the Houston Rockets won their 10th straight game.
Did he just go full Lance McCullers?
Yes, he did. It's so when he did that, because didn't you make something similar to that?
Well, he was the one that first did it.
Oh, he did it first?
But,
okay.
But I also did it on yesterday's radio show. If you've ever watched the 1970s movie The Warriors, it's about a bunch of roving gangs of gangs in New York City. And It's just a wild, wild, wacky movie about this group called the Warriors that's just trying to survive, and everyone's trying to kill them because they think that they've killed this, like, super important gang leader. So, you know, the Warriors being the Warriors, you want to fight the Warriors? Like that one guy in the car who's trying to get them to come out so that they can kick their ass? That's what the Rockets want, and I love hearing it. And somehow, some way, Joe, the Warriors continue to win despite a locker room that seems to be having issues, to put it mildly.
Yeah, Draymond Green thrown out in the first 4 minutes of last night's game. I mean, he knew it too. I mean, you don't say what he said to a ref, which, to put it kindly, even if I could swear on the radio, I'm not allowed to say that word. So he got thrown out of the game last night. As soon as he got the second tech, he was already gone. Like he said the not nice words to the ref, and he just walked right to the locker room. So he knew he was getting tossed. And then Steph Curry looked like he started crying on the court.
He did look like he cried.
I think he cried.
Billy Bob cried because he was a bit of a crier.
He cried. He
Steph
cried.
Curry cried because he was a bit of a crier. So are people going to get on him more for this than they got on for him for his improper mouth guard usage? I think Big Orthodontia was really not a fan of Steph Curry.
I saw this morning on one of the Speak for Your Pizza shows. Mm. Are you okay that I steal that from you?
No, I mean, everyone should call it Speak for Your Pizza.
So on
they're all the same.
One of the Speak for Your Pizza shows, one of the guys was saying that his sources are telling me that Steph Curry has bad leadership in the locker room and that he really is part of the problem with the Warriors right now and Draymond Green acting like a petulant child.
What's Steph supposed to do?
Exactly. Punch him in the face?
I mean, I watched the replay of Draymond's latest ejection, which took place 4 minutes into last night's game against the Magic, which the Warriors somehow won, and rather convincingly. They won it by 8. And if you watch the replay, you have no idea why or how Draymond Green gets teed up, because the replay just shows the replay of a foul that Draymond Green was not even a part of. Green complains to the ref for at least 21 seconds straight. Steph Curry goes over to him, taps him on the belly. And I suppose you could argue that Steph should have stepped in there and shoved him away in the same way that some Rockets player shoved Jabari Smith Jr. away from Josh Giddey last night after their dust-up. Yeah, maybe Steph Curry should have done that. But I think everyone's kind of gotten to the point with Draymond where you can't really control what he says. But my God, that ref gave him every opportunity to shut up.
Dude, just to walk away. Walk away.
He kept going for 21 seconds after the initial technical foul was called. Mm-hmm. 21 seconds. And that ref clearly was going out of his way to not give Draymond Green the tech. If that was Dylan Brooks, Brooks gets that immediately. And it's funny that there's a double standard, it seems, when it comes to players in the NBA. Because Dylan Brooks, obviously, has a reputation. But Draymond Green's reputation is much more high profile.
They made him go to therapy this year so he could come back to the court.
Yes, they did.
Get rid of him.
And he choked Patty Mills the night before.
And then he's dropping that stuff to a ref. Like, this is where Adam Silver has to show he's got a pair. And really, he should set the same standard all the time, which is if I tell you to do something, which is to get your act together and suspend you and make you do certain steps to get back on the court, and then you break my trust, suspend him for longer. Like, that's exactly what he did with Ja Morant. He told Ja Morant, hey, Betty, no more guns, please, on Instagram, and then Ja Morant did it anyway, so they suspended him for much longer. They suspended Draymond Green indefinitely. I think that was actually maybe it was even the Warriors who did it. Made him go to therapy, and then you got this stuff. Like, I'm so over it. You can be that much of a villain when you're good. You can be. You can cross the line, and you can get away with more stuff because then you just become the villain. Right now, you're just a loser. You're fighting for a play-in spot, and you're pulling this nonsense. Go away. You're a single, triple machine.
I do enjoy the car crash from afar, because it's not my car crash. You would think that this would actually be helping the Rockets out. Mm-hmm. And somehow it's not. And somehow they won last night. I mean, Orlando's not a bad team by any means. They're going to the playoffs if the season were to end today. So I don't know how Golden State keeps this up, But, I mean, you got Draymond publicly saying, oh, we're not concerned about the Rockets. Well, the Rockets have won 11 in a row. I think you should start to be concerned about them when your actions are potentially hurting the Warriors. Ejected 4 minutes into a game where you're one of the Warriors' best defenders against a team that has some good big men. Dumb.
Yeah.
Very dumb. And if you saw afterwards, I think Draymond Green posted like a picture to his Instagram or his Instagram story, or maybe it was to Twitter, where you're saying, like, thankful for my teammates having my back.
They have your back.
What do you think the teammates are really thinking about him? Because that's the public thing that you see. That's a bit of propaganda for Warriors fans out there, but and maybe Warriors media. But what are the people truly thinking?
They're tired of it.
They have to be.
I mean, even last night after the game, Steph Curry talked about he was very politically correct when he discussed it in the post game, and so was Steve Kerr. But they both said last night that they need him out there. And they do. Like, it's, they need him on the court. They're publicly saying it. And if that's what they're publicly saying, just to be politically correct, I would imagine behind the scenes, they're done. So as one team kind of is unraveling, the confidence is through the roof for the other team. First we get, as they're boarding the plane, Jalen Green calls his shot, says the Rockets are going to win their 10th straight game. They do win their 10th straight game. And then his confidence just continues because after the game, he said that the Rockets are going right to the play-in tournament.
It was lit. Everybody was happy, celebrating, screaming. I mean, we fought for that one. We worked hard. That's how we should react after a game. That's 10-0. We still keep going. We got, 10 more games left, 11 games left? Yeah, so, I mean, ain't nothing to go crazy about, but yeah, we're going to celebrate our wins.
You're going to have a play-in game?
Yeah, we're going to get a play-in game. We're going to keep going.
I love it. I think that's why I ball in on the Rockets. There's something about Jalen, just I'm in on the personality a little bit.
I think if it was a little more emphatic, this would have been picked up.
Yeah.
The thing is, he's been saying this the last couple of nights, like, yeah, people should be taking notice of us. But he does it with no energy.
Yeah.
This is why he'll never be a successful sports talk show host.
He will
like
not.
Me. He'll never be that.
Most likely to be a successful sports talk show host on the Rockets.
Alper and Şengün, because he has a loyal Turkish audience.
Yeah, the YouTube numbers for Alper's YouTube show would be through the roof.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Şengün could probably say whatever he wants as long as he doesn't offend Ertaboobs, their dictator there. All those people will follow hook, line, and sinker for everything he says.
I get Paul Gallant, Tari Eason vibes. Like, Tari Eason, just the way the Warriors
high
come
energy.
Out to play.
Got to be a high-energy guy. Yeah. I mean, if you're understanding dated references like me and you're younger than me, I mean, damn. You are special. You are definitely a possible sports talk radio host in the future if you can successfully make a really dated reference that only, like, the upper echelon in terms of age range of your audience is going to get it.
Yeah,
that's just me.
Yeah, Tari Eason would be my pick to be the best sports talk radio host on the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, Dylan Brooks,
he would just yell.
He walks the walk, but he actually does not talk the talk.
Yeah, Dylan Brooks.
Ironically,
Dylan Brooks would have the whole Twitch blocked at this point.
He's so soft spoken. I don't know if he would block the Twitch, but he did have his little back and forth with the Grizzlies Lakers series.
Yeah.
I poke bears. Why is everyone painting me out to be the villain? All right, I guess I'm the villain. It was quite the five stages of knowing what you are. But yeah, he wouldn't do it. Jabari Smith Jr. Not enough self confidence after last night's game. Yeah, we weren't very good. We messed up a lot. It's like you just won an amazing game against a really good team, dude.
Yeah,
it's like the best one of the year.
Well, I like the he knows not to overpump it too much at the same time.
Well, you got it. You got to draw a line somewhere.
All right, we are broadcasting live here at the Decoy. Come hang out. Watch Astros opening day. Opening up here in about a half hour from now. Throughout all of the Astros opening day series, they'll have 100-ounce Shiner Bock Towers for $10, $3 Maker's Marks, $2 Mexican candy shots for all the games during the opening series. During March Madness, $6 Casamigos. And plus Friday night, they will have the Cougs West Houston watch party with full audio throughout the bar and a DJ playing music during the commercials live here at the Decoy. When we get back, our 10-minute drill on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. We're ready for some football, baby.
Stand! Hush!
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant and Joe George. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time.
Sauce Gardner.
He's got some takes.
Sauce Gardner just really.
We actually have the audio of this.
Oh, we do?
We do have the audio of this. Sauce Gardner was on a podcast, and I don't know why he felt the need to go down this rabbit hole, but he got into a back and forth with this podcast host. I'm going to ask Sean Maves, executive producer of the Kalani George radio program, can we play this? Do you think this is inbounds?
Well, A, thank you for promoting me to executive producer. I think I'm
executive
just producer.
Hell yeah, dude.
I mean,
that's a no. That's a no.
You guys are cowards.
If there's a question mark, I trust Sean's judgment.
Cowards.
For everyone out there, look up Sauce Gardner Aiden Ross, and it's A-D-I-N Ross. This will pop up. And
he said...
He said, Paul, you can say it.
He said, Sauce Gardner, Jets cornerback Sauce Gardner said that Jews run the world after a dramatic pause. And then afterwards he said, well, hang on. I've learned a lot about a little thing called life and about treating others with respect. Do we think Sauce Gardner's learned his lesson?
No, you don't learn a lesson that fast.
I'm going to say this about Sauce Gardner versus Derek Stingley, two men who will always be linked together because the Texans put Stingley before Gardner. Stingley third, Gardner fourth to New York. I'm just so thankful that this guy's not here.
Hey, he seems like a headache waiting to happen.
There's no doubt he's a great corner, but the man lives online. Mm-hmm. And as part of this living online side of things, probably goes down some rabbit holes. And to go on a podcast and just throw that out after a dramatic pause where it's clear he was wondering whether or not he should say it, and then actually saying it, man, I'm just thankful that guy's not here.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have him here as a talented player, but frankly, as long as Derek Stingley Jr. stays healthy, the difference is not going to be that much. They're both going to be two of the best cornerbacks in the NFL if both are healthy. At this point, so I'm very okay with having Derek Stingley Jr. over Sauce Gardner, because you're the need to live online. That's one thing I hope Jalen Green has learned through all of us is
get offline,
stay off online.
You don't need to get in Roosh's DMs.
Yeah, just you don't need a sub Instagram story every single time you see Rockets Twitter talking trash about you.
Correct,
but like just back up just a little bit and everything will be fine. Speaking of the Jets. Apparently, Robert Saleh and their head coach, and their owner, Woody Johnson, had a screaming match at this NFL coaches, owners, GM meetings that happened. Now, they disputed it.
Of course they did.
But I like Colleen Wolf, and I'm going to trust her side of the story and that she got this right.
I want the Jets to know it was me.
You leaked it.
No, but I told somebody who would make it a bigger deal.
What do you mean?
Oh, I was listening to the Around the NFL podcast, and I heard that at the end. And let's just say I forward this to somebody who cares about the Jets a great deal, just because I was like, you know what? F the Jets. I'm not kidding.
Okay.
I'm not kidding.
Interesting.
Anything that damages the Jets is good for me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
They seem to be your number one most hated franchise.
No, I don't hate them. Like, they don't matter, but I want
you hate their fans.
I want them to stay in their place. Yeah.
Who is your number one most hated franchise?
Yankees.
It is still the Yankees?
Still the Yankees, yeah.
Yeah. They're the worst.
But yeah.
Okay.
It's been very funny seeing that story blow up, because I just thought, oh, this might be interesting, huh?
Robert Kraft, speaking of teams that you like, Paul, he made an interesting statement talking about how he didn't seem to love the Dynasty documentary. I know he kind of went after his own guys for comments that were made in there, but he also seemed a little unhappy with the direction of the documentary, which I found odd. Because at the end of it, it says Kraft Productions.
It seems like he was the one who greenlighted it to be produced this way. I am with a lot of the Patriots players in that, yes, there was a lot of drama that took place over the course of this run, and it wasn't going to be all sunshine and rainbows, but there should have been some more sunshine and rainbows, because there really wasn't much of it. You would barely think that the Patriots won 6 Super Bowls and went to 9 over that stretch. They completely glossed over a 21-game winning streak. They completely glossed over 2 Super Bowls. You could go back and forth between the success and the drama, and I think still have a compelling documentary. Obviously, you weren't going to make everybody happy. Maybe you're going for the people that aren't Patriots fans more than you are going for the people who are Patriots fans. But a lot of Patriots players, after the fact, are talking about it. It actually led to a point where Julian Edelman was calling out Wes Welker, the two holy slot receivers of the scrappy and gritty era of Patriots football. And Edelman was basically saying, yeah, dude, like some of the stuff you were saying about how Bill Belichick allowed Aaron Hernandez to figuratively get away with murder at practice were, let's just say, a reach.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't what do you – I'm trying to figure out how to describe this, okay? So yesterday this photo went viral of Jaden Daniels.
His elbow
it's, looked like it extended out above in front of his arm.
Yes.
His elbow looked broken. There's no other way to put it. Now, I saw one of these Twitter doctors try to say it was like a inflamed something sack or I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a medical condition that he would call a red flag. But the photo is bizarre. It literally looks like his elbow is shattered in the way it's extending past his arm.
And you got some doctors online, because there's other pictures now that people have seen of Jaden Daniels throwing a football, and someone said, oh, he must have elbow bursitis.
That's what it is.
Or something like that.
Yeah. But it was an odd one, to say the least. It was the most viral thing about Jaden Daniels' pro day. Are you a believer? Do you like Jaden Daniels?
I honestly, I saw his elbow. Now I'm wondering if he's too much of a freak to be drafted. His elbow is alarmingly disgusting.
I really don't know how to describe it.
It's like, just disgusting.
Yeah.
It looks like someone was photoshopping and did a poor Photoshop with his elbow. But if you take a look at all the pictures of Jaden Daniels' elbow, that is not just a one photo thing. I don't know why Ian Rappaport chose to tweet that photo, but it's crazy. No one seemed to notice this about Jaden Daniels until yesterday when Ian Rappaport just tweets out a photo of Jaden Daniels throwing a ball. And I get why everybody was like, whoa,
honestly,
what is that?
If I was Ian Rappaport and I captured that photo or someone on my team captured the photo, I'm like, I'm going to go viral with this thing. You know, as soon as you see it, that it's going to catch so much attention online because it's just a weird, weird, weird thing. People are very upset that the NFL, I saw Mad Dog crying about this, at the season opener for the NFL season, or one of them will be on Peacock this year. The Eagles game in Brazil will be on Peacock.
On the cock?
Yeah. Dang. Why are people so, why are we still getting upset about this?
What, about Peacock?
Just in general, like, yeah, they're going to, like, Amazon or Peacock's going to have a playoff game this year.
I think it's annoying that it's on all of these apps and that everybody needs to have all of these streaming apps to watch everything. I think that's more the frustration. We all thought that moving away from cable that we would be able to get a couple of things, a couple of different options, and those few options meant that we would all get everything that we possibly could want. And instead, what we're getting is all sorts of things that you got to pay like $7.99 a month for to watch what? One game?
Yeah, or create a free trial with an email and stuff like that.
We are literally back to having cable. And it's frustrating.
Well, it's worse because I have cable and I have to pay a ton of money for all this other stuff. The only one I haven't done and I won't do is I'll just take the night off from the Astros or listen to my old friends for a night if they're on Apple. I don't do Apple TV. There's been no shows. Like I know what
you didn't like the three-headed monster broadcast with, you know, Katie Nolan and that one guy and the guy with alarmingly but beautifully white hair. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah,
and the other guy.
I Apple TV's not for me. I didn't watch Ted Lasso.
Katie Nolan.
Everyone said why? Free from what? Being bad?
Stop. She's got great taste in men. Dan Soder, great comedian. Come on.
I loved her show on Fox.
Yeah.
And then it just downhill.
I doubt you even
like
watched it.
Like a roller coaster.
I doubt you even watched it.
I used to watch Garbage Time. Is that what you call it? Garbage Time? Mm-hmm. Is that where you got your name from, Garbage Time?
Probably.
Paul the Thief here on ESPN 97.5.
You're stealing lines from me. You sexist.
I think we're friends now, though. that's why I said thanks. All right, Dusty Baker is in San Francisco, and he's just got to be real upset when he sees the Astros opening day roster because he got no lefties. Joe Espada gets two. We'll discuss that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
First, let me tell you about my friends at Highway Cantina. Guys, this is your go-to before and after margarita pit stop for any of the big games downtown. Their Tall Texan Margarita, $9.75, is one of the best that I've ever had. But there's so many other options at the Highway Cantina. And we're talking about, from just your traditional Tex-Mex perspective, some of the best chicken fajita that I've ever had. But you can get wood-fired oysters. You can get all sorts of fantastic food at this place. And it's within walking distance of all the great Edo locations. So, you're going to the game? Go here. Looking for a work happy hour to have downtown? Look no further. Hell, looking to impress your boss with a very cool, clean place? Well, that's what you're going to get with the Highway Cantina. I love this spot. I will be by later tonight after opening day. I hope to see you guys down there. Tell them Paul Gallant sent you by.
ESPN 97.5. To Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at the Decoy in Spring Branch.
One of the more remarkable plays that we've seen from Astros-Yankees series, Jose Altuve had zero business going home on that play. He was thrown out by a mile, and then Gary Sanchez, that bum, just dropped it. What a lucky play that was for the Houston Astros, because
indeed,
there was no way that should have worked in their favor.
None.
That was like the, I feel like that's the beginning of the Jose Altuve, what are you doing, buddy, on the base path? I don't remember if it started before that, but it feels like it started there. I'm just like reckless abandon.
I hope they're better at that this year. They've been working on it this offseason. You know, base running.
They're going to be more aggressive this year.
Well, maybe certain people should be less aggressive. Jose Altuve.
Yep.
It is crazy that he's gone from being the best base stealer in the American League to an absolute car crash waiting to happen on
the
base paths.
I just don't understand it. It's over aggressiveness at times when a lot of times you don't need to be either.
Yes, exactly.
And sometimes it works out for him and you kind of ignore it in that moment. Or it's one of those things where, like this play, you go no, 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 and then you scream yes because something good happens. But yeah, Jose Altuve, that play, it was a fun one. And that was also the end of Gary Sanchez's like hype train of being a good catcher in baseball. Because a lot of people thought he was going to be something special. And then he got exposed as one of the worst just fielding catchers in the game. And then we realized he can't hit the ball either.
Mm-hmm.
We were broadcasting live here at the Decoy. Coming out, watch the Astros opening day game. Throughout all the Astros series versus the New York Yankees, they're going to have $10 Scharnerbach Towers, 100 ounces, $3 Maker's Marks, $2 Mexican candy shots. During March Madness games, they have $6 Casamigos. And then Friday night, the Cougs West Houston watch party will be happening. They'll have the audio going throughout the Decoy, and they'll have a DJ playing music during commercial breaks. So you will do that. So great place to watch March Madness. Great place to watch Astros opening day. Come on out. If you're coming early, maybe I'll buy you some Mexican candy shots. They're only $2. I can afford quite a few of those.
Yeah.
So, and if you only like Day One Donis to ask for a beer, if I like you, I might do that too.
If you like them.
If I like you.
Wow, that's friendsist.
There's a lot of people I like.
Yeah.
There's some people who are only worth $2 Mexican candy shots, though.
Wow.
Sorry. It's the truth.
They're only worth $2 Mexican
candy shops?
Well,
from my wallet, at least. They're worth a lot more.
You're backtracking. You got to double down here.
No, I'm not. No,
you got to double down.
That's really mean to say someone's only worth $2.
But you just said it, and now you're backing down.
Yeah. Okay, you're right.
Stand in the pocket.
All right, stand in the pocket.
Defend your take about how some people...
They're only worth $2.
Are only worth $2.
Yep.
Like Woody Johnson, owner of the New York Jets.
He's pissed.
I saw him. He just denied it publicly.
He just put out a tweet.
I love it.
He said all this nonsense.
The best way to make a story go away is to confront it directly and deny it.
Yeah, so Woody Johnson, owner of the Jets, just recapping that story we just told. Colleen Wolf of the NFL Network.
I stand with Colleen Wolf.
That Robert Saleh and Woody Johnson got into a heated exchange during the meetings, at the league meetings. Woody Johnson just tweeted, all this nonsense about a heated argument between Coach Saleh and me at the league meeting is absolutely false.
That's not what my source is telling me.
It is yet another irresponsible report from the NFL Network.
Well, my source, and my source is Colleen Wolf on the great Around the NFL podcast, is that is a load of balagna.
And then he said, please disregard.
You get people to disregard it. That's why the Jets are losers. Because their owner is stepping in it. Ignore. This is an organization that so badly wants to stop the noise off the field.
Yeah.
This is how you keep the noise going. You don't acknowledge it. You feel the need to deny a report? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Colleen is right. This happened. This is the most believable story ever.
Yeah, just literally.
Look at Saleh's picture in the team. Look at Robert Saleh in the coach's team photo.
Yeah.
Just look at his face. He looks like a man who's aged more than a president ages in the years that he's been coaching the Jets. He looks miserable.
Yeah, he does. So Dusty Baker's probably upset because the Astros have two lefties in their bullpen. You think Dusty actually sees this? And it's just like, come on, guys. Like, I'm sure he would have loved
Dusty.
Josh Hader.
Dusty's probably like, you know, the Catholic Church and hates left-handed people. He's left-handed, sis. You know, I'm just throwing out accusations all show long today.
It was
crazy that they had no left-hander on the team because it does seem to defy conventional wisdom and especially the old-school mindset that you have to have a lefty throw against a lefty, which so many teams love to do. And yet, Dusty Baker went in the complete opposite direction on that front, and it didn't hurt them.
Yeah. Yeah, it changed a little bit when they changed the rules where a relief pitcher has to face three guys. Because a lot of times you will see, I mean, like, this is why Dusty Baker would stack his lineup with, you know, Yordan and then Bregman and then Tucker or some kind of variation of that order. Because you would want to separate your lefties so that if a lefty comes in, they're also going to face maybe multiple righties. And at this point, I think we just overrated that stuff. That's one of those baseball things that they did for so long. And I don't really know how often the numbers actually verified that it worked to that point. So think about the Astros' success that they had in the World Series. The two biggest moments in the postseason run against the Mariners and then the Phillies are when these managers bring in a lefty specialist to face Yordan Alvarez, and then they smash out of the ballpark. So it's untraditional, I guess, but I'm excited to have at least one good lefty on this team.
Hell yeah.
Parker's not that guy.
Maybe he is.
I mean, maybe. Maybe the spring training stuff actually means something.
You're doubting a lefty.
I know, but like his biggest fan just walked into the decoy.
That's true.
Parker Mashinsky. Joel Blank loves Parker Mashinsky.
There's nothing wrong with using your left hand.
I wanted to see if I could, like, force my son to be a lefty.
Yeah.
It's not working.
I supposedly was a lefty
when I
was a kid.
I mean, we had the early signs, too, where he was eating with his left hand. Mm-hmm. But then we started, you know, put a baseball bat in his hand, but he won't do it. It's really disappointing. Because he's got a height disadvantage, like me, I assume. And I'm assuming he's going to be not a tall person. So I was trying to find just, like, some way to elevate his game.
Who's the shortest pitcher in baseball history?
Oh, I bet you there's some guy. There's six guys.
Yeah.
There's guys under six. There's plenty of guys under
shortest
6 foot.
Shortest pitcher in baseball history.
I'm going to go 5. I'm going to guess 5'7".
Bobby Shantz. Guess how tall he was. Old Bobby.
5'4".
5'6".
Hey, it's like me.
Yeah.
Anyone from, like, I don't know, the modern era?
Billy Wagner was 5'10".
Okay.
Hall of Famer.
I know it's not tall. It's just taller than me.
Not yet Hall of Famer.
So.
Yeah. How about Jason Frazor of the Toronto Blue Jays? That's not that long ago.
Okay.
How about
5'8"?
Mordecai Brown.
What a name.
Wonder if Sauce Gardner likes him. Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious as to how many other guys were under, because it seems like 5'9 and under.
Yeah, because like a leg strength thing for how fast you can throw is what they say. Like mm-hmm. the taller you are, the better. All right, what is the – is there one thing to point to with the Rockets turnaround? We'll discuss that next here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Before we do that, I want to tell you about my friends at LaBerge Lake Charles. We had an awesome weekend there last week doing the bullpen from there noon to 3 this last Saturday. With myself, Brian, Sean, we teamed up on some Astros bets while we were there at the sportsbook. We took the Astros over 92.5 wins. We took the Astros plus 400 to make it to the World Series. So great sportsbook, plenty of televisions to watch. So if you want to watch your Texas teams, LaBerge Lake Charles is the place to do it. We were talking to the sportsbook manager. He said last year that they were popping every single Astros playoff game. So it's a great spot for you to travel to, only an easy two-hour drive. And before you do, make sure you download the Penn Play app. When you do, you have a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Play cash. So when you want to leave Texas, when you want to go bet on games, make sure you head over to LaBerge Lake Charles.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.